Well, it's good to be back, Circleville. Just talk to you about the trip that you participated in earlier this year. There were 41 baptisms while I was there, connected both to the Gospel Chariot and to some of the preaching that we did. So let's just get on into it here real quick. This is an old picture. Compare flying over Africa to flying over the U.S., and you look there, and there's not a whole lot down there. So, okay. First sign I saw when I came into Zambia was "Welcome to Zambia, Coca-Cola." So, Zambia is much more Western now than it was when I first started going. The influence of the West, obviously. When I first went, cell phones were not as widely spread as they are. I could make internet connection only on rare occasions, and now, of course, everybody's connected. So they're much more modern, but the drawback is the West has having a significant influence in Zambia, not necessarily for the best. Someone had mentioned, please give me an idea of how big Zambia is. Here's where it's located on the continent of Africa, south central. Actual size, my guess, bigger than the state of Texas. It's hard for me to know that. I found this a couple years ago. Most people don't realize how big Africa is. Now, as you look at the map up there, you'll see China, the United States, Eastern Europe, India, Western Europe, all but fit within the landmass that is Africa. It's a bigger thing. Like I tell people, where are you from? I'm from Texas. Well, I know a guy in El Paso. Do you know him? You know, 800 miles away from where I live. Well, it's a little bit like Africa. Well, I go to Ghana, you know, what do you know about that? It's 3,000 miles away. But anyway, it's a huge area. It is, of course, obviously a continent. I'm not sure the population of Africa, but I'm sure it is significant from the standpoint of a percentage of the world's population. My guess is probably close to 1 billion people live on the continent of Africa. So, other things, everybody's interested in Africa. The baobab tree is unique to Zambia or to Africa. It's actually a fairly hideous looking tree. The Zambian tradition is for the baobab is that when God made the baobab tree, it was a beautiful tree. It was a very proud and arrogant tree. And in punishment, God pulled it up, flipped it over, and stuck it back down in the ground. So that's what it looks like. Now this one, probably a person could stand right in that little end. They get very large, and this is a big one. The other thing, this one, I like this just from the standpoint of, you know, Jack, I know, probably tells you a lot of stuff you really don't want to hear, but Lucy, how many of you ever heard of Lucy? Lucy, one of the early men. This visited Addis Ababa, the National Museum in Ethiopia, and this is a representation of Lucy, early man. Lucy's about this tall. Now, those are not the actual bones. They're laid out in a case. But the darkly colored ones, that's the only bones that exist. All the rest of that, the white and the blue, is part of what they have put together to say this is what this thing looked like. So, early man, but at any rate. So you see they really have very little of it. Everybody's interested in the livestock. There's a hippo from Zambia, so we've done due diligence to that. So everybody, when they think of Africa, they think of its wildlife. So unfortunately, in the Siavonga district, you will rarely see any of the wildlife because most of it has been killed and eaten, although that's technically not legal to do, but that legality and what people do are two different things. Okay, I began here preaching on Sunday in Siavonga. I stayed for 4 weeks. It was a very... What time am I supposed to stop? 12:20? When does Jack stop? 1 o'clock? Pardon? 11:15. Is anybody still here when you finish? Just, you know, preaching basic essential things, New Testament Christianity, emphasis on studying the Bible. So this was, I believe, my first Sunday there. So just to show you. Then they had a Saturday afternoon where they wanted to do a study on the church, and they were expecting 50, and 110 showed up. So we had a pretty good sized group, spent all day just looking at the New Testament church as far as what was it intended to be, what actually brought it about, this kind of thing. New Testament Christianity, which to me is always a valid approach, because a lot of people talk about being Christian, but they talk about being some particular kind of Christian. So this is pretty good. You can see what they've done with the building. They hang the drapes. They will not, most any of them, and you'll see this even in some of the other congregations, they will not leave a building just plain. The women will get busy and make curtains that they'll hang off of the wall, and that's what you've got going there. Actually, behind that is their raised podium, but it is full of boxes from the container they got of used clothing. So they haven't distributed it all yet. So now, one thing I started this year, to me, for the success of the church long term, they're going to have to develop some initially men who are going to be able to work with the Bible in a way that is much more in-depth, much more, I don't know if you want to use the word technical, than any of them can at this particular point. Again, you know, most people know about the Bible what someone teaches them, and unfortunately that's where most of them are in Zambia. Now, that's not altogether bad, but what's that mean long-term? If we cannot develop any Bible students who can work not just with the text, but work with the tools and work sometimes even in some way with the language, what does that mean the church is going to become in another generation or two? Is it even going to exist? Is it going to be always, with the umbilical cord to the state, to the church in the States? Of course, one of these days, we may all nearly be there. They're going to need to be sending missionaries here, but that's another issue. The point is, for the church to survive, we're going to have to begin to develop some leadership that is more than just, I'm going to stand up and talk about the Bible on Sunday. And that's what I want to do. But I don't want a school of preaching. Because in Zambia, there's maybe two or three Zambians who are fully supported by the church in Zambia to preach. Any of the others that are being supported outside, from outside. Charles Peary is supported from outside of Zambia. The church in Zambia at this stage is never going to be able to pay a preacher. The congregation here in Siavonga, the one Sunday we had 160. The contribution was about $20. So the point is, if we're going to put schools of preaching in, then these guys are going to be trained. They think they're going to be a preacher. And unfortunately, the big Western influence is they're going to go out and the church is going to pay them to preach. Not in Zambia. Plus, there's the other drawback that I have seen. If a fellow in a village wants to study the Bible, and there are a few schools of preaching, he goes to the school of preaching, say, down in Lusaka. You know where he's not at anymore? He's not at the church in the village. And most of the time when these young men go, they are already involved in those churches. So it pulls them out of the church that they're in, takes them down, trains them to be a preacher, and guess what? They never go back. There's no work. In the village, you're going to be a farmer, you're going to have goats, you're going to have cattle. You're not going to be paid to preach and to study the Bible. So to me, schools of preaching have not been all that helpful in Zambia. I've seen a number of examples. So what I want to do is begin something I call School of Bible and Preaching. I want to teach them how to study the Bible. I guess in a similar way that maybe I was taught at Sunset. where they can, they don't have to have somebody tell them what it is. They know, you know, and try to make access to some of the tools, but also teach these men how to do a presentation, how to do a lesson, because they really don't. They'll get together and wander around for an hour and 20 minutes, and you're not sure if they really said anything. And a lot of them, as I say, they talk about the Bible, they don't talk Bible. So I want to start to train them, and I want to do it in a way. Here we started with 19. It's not open to anybody and everybody. It's by invitation only. Now, Charles did get some grief because he didn't get any women involved in it, and they would have filled up the room. So the women over there would make the men look really pathetic sometimes. But we started with 19 from some of the village, several there from Siavonga. The idea, let's start training them. Number one, how to study the Bible was one, and on the church. So want to do probably two classes at least every time I go. Now, Charles thinks that I should go over twice a year. Right now, I don't know how that would even happen at this point. The idea is interesting and probably would be something I'd be willing to do if it could be afforded, so I don't really know. The other thing is we could also do this same training in other places. So that's where that is. It's still kind of in its formative stages, so I'm doing something organized a little differently than I've ever done before, so it'll be a little bit of a work for me. Here I am teaching them. Of course, when I teach, I like to write on the board. That's my PowerPoint, okay? This is the most PowerPoint I'll ever do, talking about Zambia. The rest of the time, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to have a board and write, because to me, when I preach, my style is such, I need to be thinking on my feet, I need to be working. PowerPoint is too limiting. So, but at any rate, that's me. Here's the group, 19 guys. Charles did tell me there were a couple guys said that they weren't up to this. So it's a pretty intense kind of a thing for about a week. Worked this year with Gospel Chariot, the church in Lampasas where I'm attending and doing some teaching, is a supporter of George Funk and Gospel Chariot. So they're willing to help fund my trip if I work with the Gospel Chariot, which is a pretty good tool. We've done it before, Gospel Chariot, sort of based around World Bible School. It's built around a film of the life of Christ that is in the language of the people, and they will show the film usually over the course of two nights. They'll break in the middle and there'll be an episode of preaching or teaching, and then they'll do more of the film. So two nights. We had originally intended to do it in two sites in Siavonga and then take it to the northwest. Some sort of finagling went on, and the guys in the chariot were told that Charles had given up 2 days that were supposed to be for us so that they could stay 2 days in Colomo, which Charles never did. So we got robbed of one other place, which was a site that one congregation was looking to plant a congregation, and that didn't get to happen this year. So I was a little annoyed at that. But anyway, we had good crowds here. It's hard, the pictures, I've got some pictures. It's hard to take a picture at night. I've got a bunch of pictures. I'm not going to show a huge number of them, but you'll get the idea. First night we had, I'm pretty sure, the crowd of over 150 there. We break in the middle, and I would then present a lesson. I tried to tie what I taught in with the film of the life of Christ. We had 7 respond the first night to be baptized. So it's just a pretty good way to do it. Now, the thing about, let me go back one here real quick. Let me go back two. If you take a look, they show the film on the screen here. This box is their baptistry. So they carry a baptistry with them, and that is is very important, because when we go to baptize somebody in the City of Ogden District, it's sometimes very hard to find a place to baptize them, because you're looking at a river or a lake, and the lake, of course, is a long ways away. Lucitu River doesn't have water in it all year round, so having a place to baptize is challenging. We've tried to find some ways to work around that, and we have not come up with a good one yet that's logistically very good. I'm not going to show you all the baptisms, but here he is being baptized in this. It's handy. Second night, there was, we think, better than 250. Sometimes it's like probably getting attendance in a Church of Christ in America. You can never get a time when everybody's seated. Okay? Sometimes there's always somebody out going to the restroom, somebody out taking the kids out, so you kind of go, well, okay, this is our best shot at how many were here. So, of course, then you can let the preacher count, and there's always going to be 30 or 50 more than there were. So, but we guessed probably better than 250. And keep in mind, in a village that doesn't have electricity, if somebody shows up and is going to show you a film, that'll get people out. And it does. And it's a film, of course, The Life of Christ. This night we had two people respond to be baptized. Again, you see the drawback of trying to make pictures. Now, the truck is completely self-contained. It carries a generator with it. And a couple of places they set up where they could plug in, say, to the power to church building, they will. But if not, they've got a generator that will run. I don't know how long it will run on one load of fuel. So here's the baptism for that night. Now, one of the issues here in Chilindi, which is where we were, and it shows how opposition comes along. Somebody started saying that water that they baptize people in, when they leave here, they're going to bewitch people with it. So we run into times where people have not been happy with what we were doing, the fact that we were having an influence. And this, of course, Zambians are not like Americans. They're extremely superstitious, if you will. Very much tuned into spirits and things like that. Practice of witchcraft, some of the old pagan things are still there. So this was something that the way to deal with it is the fellow on the truck told them before we leave. He said, here's what we're going to do because of what we're hearing. We're going to drain the water out onto the ground while everybody's watching. So that's, you know, we've run into some of those kind of things. Then we went into well repairs. We repaired 13 wells. Just to show you some of the process, traveling around. I think I calculated just what Charles had said. The wells served probably between 25 and 26,000 people. Now, we're used to, in this country, go to the tap, turn the water on, it's good. They don't have that. They have to go and pump it. Out, the women do this, and if the well is not pumping fast or not pumping much or not pumping at all, there's a real problem. Siavonga in the summer gets 120, and somebody can tell you how long can a person live without water? I think about 3 days is it. So it's essential. Plus, it needs to be water that's not going to be dangerous. Surface water, rivers, lakes, tends to be more prone to having pathogens in them. So if they draw surface water like that, they run the risk of cholera, typhus, things like that. Now, that is not real common, but then if they have to get, I've seen people dig into the ground and the water they were able to get out of the riverbed was muddy water, but that's all they had. So the idea of being able to give them clean drinking water is significant. I had a physician tell me probably that's the single most important thing you can do to ensure health. Now, someone had asked me, class, do we put a sign on these to say the Church of Christ did it? No. The first two we did before we got really involved in it, but everybody knows who's doing this. So the church has a good bit of social capital because of our work with Wells, because of our work with medical. I believe I was telling them a lot of times if a well's not working, they don't go to the council. They go to Charles. Now, of course, the council has made it to the point to where we can't repair wells without the council guy, which also means I've got to pay him to come and do what I could do, and I have to put fuel in his truck to come and do what I can do. And that's, if we want to repair the wells, that's what the council is now saying we have to do. So I have to add an extra amount onto the well repair just to cover the cost of their guy. And usually their guy has at least one other guy with him, so I have to pay both of them. So that's some of the ways, and I'd mentioned in class that the government is becoming a little bit more intrusive into some of the things we've been trying to do. And of course over there, it always involves Kwacha. Money. Okay, so here's the well Bendele, Mabampu, population of about 1,700. We repaired this well, and I'm just showing you pictures of the well and then pictures of the pumping of water. So, because otherwise we could be here the rest of the time. This is Hajuma, population of about 1,000. And again, these wells are all hand pumped. They also have to be pulled out by hand. And you have to be careful, because if you lose it down into the well, then somebody's got to go fishing for it. And that's a challenge. So it has to be done fairly systematically. Here they are. You've got 3-meter lengths of pipe. They're fastened together with a rod down the middle. And they free hang in the well down into the water, and it's just hand pumped. So Mavulele, population now about 2,200. So a pretty good size. Small, 1,000 is a small one, but again, these are only estimates. Because in a village, they don't all live clumped in. Sometimes there's, and they spread. Plus the fact that even if there's a one well for the village, everybody's going to be going to that well twice a day. So it's challenging. And here, of course, pumping the water, people standing around. This one is... Mutan de Lima, population about 2,200. Now, some of these wells were already pumping water, but there's a difference between cranking out 20 liters in, say, a minute and cranking out 20 liters in 20 minutes. Because most of the women will come and probably get minimum of 2 20-liter buckets or containers, maybe 3. Morning and then in the evening. That's the water to cook and everything else. So you figure if it's taking you an hour to pump your water and there are 18 women behind you, you can see the logistics. So a well that does only trickling water, it's producing water, but now you've got the women lining up at 3 in the morning to try and get enough water for their house. So if we can go in, a lot of things will cause it to pump less. Holes in the pipes, problems with the mechanism. So when we go in and repair, sometimes it's producing some water, but just not enough. The smile on her face is worthwhile. There, she's quite happy that the well is producing. This is Sanjay Muleke, population about 2,500. I think on this one, we had to replace quite a bit of it. So various amounts. That was what I was saying earlier. I get pipes and rods, but I will only replace what I have to replace. They will not get new equipment if it isn't needed. If it's needed, then we replace it. If it's not, if it's working, we do it, because you're not going to see it anyway. If it's an old rod, it doesn't matter. And we've gotten to the point, too, where we're starting to rebuild the pump cylinders instead of replacing them, because $350 for a pump cylinder or $10 for the little rubbers and everything. So we're trying to do things to spread to extend our money, and this one here is now pumping. This is Chinehune. Now this one had not pumped water in a while, so I think probably 6 months. Now I have known of villages that will have to move because their water well, one water well became polluted. I don't remember how. and the village eventually had to move because there wasn't any water. So we got this one running again. So this one, for two different villages, had not pumped water in over 2 years. And the ladies had to go here to get it, probably a kilometer or more away from the side of the well, downhill, and it isn't moving water. It's water that is somewhat, I don't say stagnant, but it isn't flowing water. But this was their only source. As we were repairing it, some young man brought a drum out, started beating on the drum, and the women started dancing and singing. They got pretty excited about this. So that almost makes it worth the effort just to see that. Because, you know, like I said, we go, you know, you want to get a drink of water. I think the water here doesn't taste good, but if you're thirsty, you can go out and get some water right out there. You know, or you can go down to the store and buy a bottle of water. This one, Hapepe, simply needed a new chain. Sometimes, you know, they just need those. It's like a great big bicycle chain. You pull up and the chain does this. Eventually it wears. This one needed new bearings. We've gotten the point where we'll replace the bearings on it instead of replacing the whole pump thing on the end. So anything to keep from having to... this one had no Hamukonda and Hampile, two villages using the same well. This one had not produced water in over 8 months. So... And here it is for the first time. They say, well, what's that? Why is that water that color? Because it hadn't pumped any water in almost a year. And even if that's the color of the water, they'll still use it because it's that or nothing. But it will eventually run clear. Then one of the things that we tried it on a couple of wells. It didn't work well. The council has done it where they would put PVC pipe in. And ideally, that ought to work really well. Unfortunately, it doesn't. Now, PVC is not subject to corrosion, which the galvanized base pipe is. The problem is the pipes are a little bit bigger. The pump, the cylinder itself is about 6 feet high, and it's. But the idea, this one would pump, but the pump to volume that was so small compared to what was available, that inch and a quarter pipe that we normally put in would pull a lot more volume given what it was. So this one, we came in, we had to pull everything out, the PVC, the head and everything else, and replace it with the galvanized. And it pumped out about 8 or 10 times more water per minute than it would before. This one, Masiquito, you can see, hopefully you can see the chain is wired together, so anything to get water. This is Matero Munga, population of 1,100. Again, just taking it apart. You have to hand cut and thread the rods in it if you have to put a new rod in up on the end. So sometimes it's a good bit of work. And of course, here pumping water. Okay, this year, I went for the first time, this was the Gospel Chariot, to the northwest part of Zambia. Never been there before. We went up here. Our first stop was Solwezi. Population 200,000 plus. Now, there are churches in the northwest, and what I found is a pretty good churches, well organized, but not well grounded in the sense of their Bible knowledge was not what I would consider the best, certainly up to what they needed to have. So we brought the Gospel Chariot here, both as an outreach and to make contact. And Charles and I have decided that if we can, we'll probably spend more time in the Northwest this next year than down in Siavonga. The church in Siavonga is doing well. It's fairly well grounded, fairly well established and organized. We see a bigger need in the Northwest right now. So first stop was Solwezi. Now, the distance, I believe, and trying to calculate the distance from Siavonga to this was our furthest we worked, 1,500 kilometers. I'm not real sure. That's close to 1,000 miles or a little more, I think. never quite sure the conversion. I think it's 0.7 mile to every kilometer, or 0.7, 1 kilometer is 0.7. Anyway, somewhere along there. About 1,000 miles, which was 2 days to get there from where we were on the road. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention, I mentioned it in class, my truck that I had over there is finished. It is not roadworthy now. The engine is solid. It's a good-sized diesel, but everything else is falling apart. It's just not worth investing the money every year that I've been having to invest in it to put it on the road, and certainly would not have been considered trustworthy to go this kind of a distance. So we were forced this year to have to pay for transport, which added to the cost. I have not decided, to some extent I want to talk to the leaders here, if we want to see if we can mount a fundraising effort to try and raise enough money for another truck, because it makes it much more convenient if we have our own transportation and I'm not having to pay out $500 to have somebody drive us to Sulawesi. So it's something we need to kind of look at. Is it worth it to try and do that? It's certainly a useful tool. So we go to Sulawesi. We met with the central church there, and here's the leadership. Now, I will tell you, just between you and me, that we did not have good success with Gospel Chariot with a couple of these congregations, and this was one of them. We didn't get a good turnout, and we didn't get, I think, much response at all, certainly not like some of the other places. Now, Sulawesi was having a crime issue at the time, and the city government had put an 8 o'clock curfew on everybody. Now, normally, because they show a film, they can't even start the program until the sun goes down. So that threw us into a little bit of a quandary with regard to that. People coming to the church building is a little more challenging in some places, and in this instance, it didn't turn out quite like I wanted. I would have preferred, but okay, we had a good program. We taught people. We encouraged the church, and that was probably the best. You can see the chairs are not full, and that's not us. We show up, we set up, they turn their PA on, and somebody starts to call people sometimes an hour and a half or 2 hours before we start. But didn't see a good turnout. And some places are just that way. Jack and I were talking, and I said, you can only do what you can do. You can't do more. You can't make people come. You can't, Who was it? Was it Richard Rogers that said you can't open and close the doors fast enough to suck people in? So, not that some people haven't tried that, but it doesn't really work. The Sunday evening crowd, not too bad. Again, preaching, they listened, beneficial from that standpoint. We did have two that requested prayer that second night. Next place we moved on to was Kasempa. I pointed it out on the map. We had to travel, down the road, and then we had to go 50 kilometers off to Kasempa. This one is a little more village, or a lot more rural. Met with the church leaders when we got there, talked, visited. We had, here I am. Now, when I get confident enough, I'll read from the local Bible. I'm pretty good with Bemba and Tonga, and this was my first time to try to read Kaunga. And I didn't do too bad. So, the more I do it, the more comfortable I get. So I do it, and it amuses those folks, and that's worth it to me. But I can do it in a way they understand what I'm saying. So we had an afternoon session ended up being a couple hour study. Again, sometimes you show up and they, we're saying, here's our program, we're going to do this evening. They say, nope, we've got this going on, so here we are. You're going to see one in a minute. I showed up and they had a full church building. So we had an afternoon study session. Then in the evening, we had 9 responses for baptism. Now, I think in Kasempa, we were only going to be able to do one night. This is the whole thing. It became a program in flux. We had more people wanting us to come than we had time to do. So we crowded in, I think, Kasempa for a one-night visit. Normally they do 2, but we did it in 1. But we had 9 people who requested baptism. And here is one of the men from the linemen, I think, on the truck baptizing them. The next place was Mufumbwe that we went to. So one night in Kasempa and then Mufumbwe. You see where that's at. And here we set up in front of the church building and people began to gather. We started a little earlier. Now, I taught almost every night. During that session between the film. Occasionally they had somebody else, had a really good crowd. We got a lot of people turned out here in Mufumbwe. Now, one of the things, I mentioned this in the class, we showed up to the church building, and there was a church building full of singing people waiting for us to show up. And they had actually been waiting for quite a while because they didn't know when we were going to get there. We left Solwezi. I'm trying to think, Monday morning, and it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours there, and they're full, and they're singing. And I say, okay, here we are, and they say, we're ready for you to teach. Okay. So here we did. And then they say, we want to put this on the radio. And I said, well, all right, if that's what you want to do, I mean, it doesn't matter to me. Once I start talking, whether people hear it on the radio or not, it's not going to slow me down. So, and they said, well, we're looking at how much they're going to charge us. We got 2 hours on the local radio station, which we think probably went as far as back as Solwezi and may have gone as far out as Zambezi for, would I say $10 or $20? $10. That was it. 2 hours. So here we are. I figured that when they came, that, you know, like here, if Jack was going to preach on the radio or whatever, the radio station would show up in a van, you know, with all this stuff. Two guys showed up. One guy had a cell phone and headphones. The other guy had a cell phone. So the guy with one cell phone stood between us, fellow on my right's translating, fellow in the middle is from the radio station holding out a cell phone. The other guy's on the phone to the regular radio station listening to the... So that's how it was done. 1 hour and 45 minutes on the radio. So I thought that was interesting. We had a number of people called in to the radio station. I don't know what the status is on that follow-up. I do know that there were several that requested somebody to bring the Church of Christ to where they were at. So we've had that happen, which is always kind of interesting. So I spoke for 1 hour and 45 minutes. 18 people responded to be baptized. I was say, boy, I must really be good. or maybe not, who knows. But I was very methodical. I did a little different kind of an approach. Just here's the Bible, here's how we know what God wants, here's what's said, here's, you know, just a methodical approach for about 1 hour and 45 minutes. And then somebody offered an invitation and people started coming, and before it was all done, we had 18. And this is not even the Gospel Chariot program, per se. Charles baptizing. It took 1 hour to baptize them all. Then we also brought some, the church in Lampasas put up some money to buy Bibles in the local language, which is always helpful. So we gave the leadership there some of those. The next place is Kavompo, which is out here. This one was a little more of a rural area. Once you get out probably into this area, there's not as much traffic as you see back up toward the Copper Belt. But the road was generally pretty good. So we went there. This is, they're working on their building. Now those blocks, they made them themselves. They're put together and molded with mud, water, and straw. And once they make them, they bake them out in the sun, and then they build a kiln and burn them. Once they burn them, they will not dissolve in the rain. So they're putting up their own new building here when we came. This one, we had a bunch of people come out. We had close to 300 at least in attendance this night. Now, one of the things I will tell you, I am not a cold-natured person. Most of the time when I go to Zambia, they're wearing coats and I'm in shirt sleeves thinking, this is really nice. And they're freezing to death. I got cold in the Northwest. At night, it was probably down to about in the upper 40s. I did not bring a sweater. I did not have anything long sleeve on, so I was cold. And then when I get up and speak, I tend to perspire just a little bit. Of course, you know what that's like now when you get... So I'm sitting there about ready to die, I think, which is unusual for me. But we had good attendance. Obviously, me saying something brilliant here. The drawback is in using this PA, I'm used to this or nothing at all. Most of the time I can be heard when I preach, but I had to care. I had to do this, and that really was limiting. Plus, they had a short cord, so I couldn't wander much. I like to move around a little bit whenever I speak. So I found that a little bit limiting, but I did all right. So, and they have these big speakers, and they crank it up. I think almost they peg them so that they were figuring that whoever was hearing it was not just the crowd, but anybody probably within the district, you know. It just was that interesting approach. And then they had the one fellow, Robert, from the Gospel Chariot. He likes to preach, he says. He doesn't preach. He yells. I mean, that's it. It's like nothing or 83 decibels. That's his thing. And you can't get him to slow down, and you can't get him to... Anyway. The last place we went was Zambezi. This is as far as I've been. Now, we did drive up here to Chavuma one afternoon when we weren't doing anything. We thought we might get to the border of Angola, but we didn't. In Chavuma, you have to go up a gravel road for 8 kilometers of the border, and we weren't going to do that. So Zambezi was our last place. This is another one. We showed up, and they were ready to go. They were also at the building, singing, waiting for us. They expected teaching to begin right away. They had set up tents out front to do this. Their church building is not a huge building. So this is one of the afternoon sessions. They actually filled up 2 tents for here to do this afternoon session. We had 3 here respond to baptism in the afternoon. And here's Charles baptizing them. Holy smoke. Who's been talking all this time? Now you see me. Now I'll point out that I am wrapped in a blanket or something there. I was that cold. Like I said, I don't get cold. But a pretty good turnout. Then here's Sunday morning, preaching to a pretty good crowd. Again, they wanted to do it over the PA. So I was doing that at the same time. I'll tell the leaders about an incident I ran into with a politician over all this. But a pretty good turnout. We had some more respond for baptism. Now, we are at the end of our program at this particular point. We had the baptisms, and then that afternoon we left. Chavuma Falls on the Zambezi River. There you go, some of that. Altogether, a very good trip. Traveled a lot of distance. I preached or taught at least once almost every day, sometimes 2 or 3 times. But a good turnout, 41 baptisms, some restorations, encouraged the congregation. We made some contacts, I think, with that radio program that we don't yet know what will result. But overall, it was a very good visit, a very good trip, very productive. And I do believe that we're going to probably focus on the Northwest. And if we go there this next year, which there's a possibility, we may also take the time to do the school there. So we'll have to see. So this is what you did in Zambia in 2018. Now, the work obviously is ongoing. We're still trying to make contacts. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. excuse me. I'll be at the back until somebody lassos me and takes me somewhere else. So be happy to answer questions, talk to you, anything you want. Not only here, but once I leave, my email and all is available. So I'll be happy to visit with you about that. So thank you on behalf of the church in Zambia for your interest in the work and your willingness to support it. I thank you on my behalf for your support of me through a number of trips. Like I said, we'd have to go back and see when's the first time Circleville was involved. So, but thanks. At the end of our lesson, I'm assuming we need to do an invitation. Customary, it's our tradition that we offer people the opportunity to take advantage of their relationship with the body of Christ. Scripture teaches that we should pray for one another. If you're struggling with something and you want your brethren to know about it, want thus to gather around you, if you will, and intercede with God on your behalf, we'd be perfectly willing to do that, would welcome that opportunity. If you're not yet a part of the body of Christ, you've been thinking about it, and you're ready to make that decision today to embrace the sacrifice of Jesus and accept the forgiveness that is there, and we can help you with that, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song.